Frankmuir goes into pessimism and investigates the humor of the subject with the help of Alfred Marx.
Hello, Lionel. I say, you're looking a bit tired.
Yes, says the little wife, when I always fears the worst. I don't get any sleep. Every time she hears a noise, she makes me go down and see if we've got burglars.
But, Lionel, it doesn't make sense. I mean, burglars are very quiet people. If there were any in the house, they wouldn't make any noise.
I told her that, you see. Now I have to keep getting up in the night because she can't hear anything. Here. This broom is hopeless.
Why?
Well, the head's fallen all four times, now the handle's come out.
How are you, Walter?
Terrible.
Oh,
terrible. Everything's going wrong. My wife's gone off with another man. My son's in prison. The house is burnt down.
Deary, deary, deary me. What are you doing at the moment?
Sending lucky charms.
Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. My little boy has swallowed 17 and a half pence.
How is he?
No change yet.
Doctor, how am I?
Well,
I mean, can I sit up in bed and read?
Yes, but don't start any cereals. An insurance salesman was trying to persuade a young wife to take out a policy on her husband's life, and working rather gingerly around to the subject, she didn't seem to understand, so he tried a more direct approach. Now, look at it this way, madam. If your husband died tomorrow, now, what would you get? Oh, she'd probably be a budgie. A woman going into a posh wedding was stopped at the church door by an usher. Excuse me, are you a friend of the groom?
No, I'm the bride's mother.
Mr. Cohen met his friend. His friend said, have you got over this insomnia yet? He said, no, I can't sleep. It's no good. I can't sleep. I've tried everything. Sleeping kills everything. The doctor told me at last I should count sheep. Last week, I counted 25,000 sheep. I had the sheep sheared. I had the wool dyed and made up in the yarn in the Hebrides, in the Harris Tree. I had it sent down here. I made 45,000 coats. And I can't get any matching lining. How can I sleep?
Well, pessimism is in everyone's nature at times. Fortunately, in most of us, it's balanced by bouts of optimism. But there are many comedians whose stock in trade is a gloomy outlook on life. For an audience, it can be very funny to hear someone cataloguing the disasters which are likely to befall him. Pessimism, as we all know, is fearing and indeed expecting the worst. But perhaps we should get a closer definition from George Bernard Shaw.
Do you know what a pessimist is? A man who thinks everybody as nasty as himself and hates himself for it.
Or another from Elbert Hubbard.
A pessimist is one who has been intimately acquainted with an optimist.
Oh, yes. Life with the eternally cheerful Pollyanna must be very wearing. But I don't know if the company of pessimists is any better. Here's Jean Rostand.
My pessimism goes to the point of suspecting the sincerity of the pessimists.
Pessimism, of course, is not one of the old imperial virtues. It's an attitude that smacks of defeat. G.K. Chesterton.
Pessimism, a thing unfit for a white man.
But it does have its pleasures, says Arnold Bennett.
Pessimism, when you get used to it, is just as agreeable as optimism.
Yes, it's quite possible to have a completely gloomy outlook and still remain quite jolly about it.
They're out of sorts in Sunderland and terribly cross in Kent. They're dull in Hull and the Isle of Mull is seething with discontent. They're nervous in Northumberland and Devon is down the drain. They're filled with wrath on the Firth, the Forth and sullen on Salisbury Plain. In Dublin they're depressed lads, maybe because they're Celts. For Drake is going west. West, lads. And so is everyone else. Hooray, hooray, hooray. Misery's on the way. There are bad times just around the corner. There are dark clouds hurtling through the sky. And it's no good whining about a silver lining, for we know from experience that they won't roll by. With a scowl and a frown, we'll keep our peckers down and prepare for depression and doom and dread. We're going to unpack our troubles from our old kit bag and wait until we drop down dead.
Noel Coward. This enjoyment of pessimism can be seen in the relish with which some people have described the misery of life. Some self-indulgence now from John H. Freer.
Despair in vain sits brooding over the putrid eggs of hope.
Sort of lay of the last minstrel. Let's cheer ourselves up now with Gustave Flaubert.
While still very young, I had a complete presentiment of my life. It was like a nauseating kitchen smell that pours through a ventilator. You don't have to eat the food cooked in such a place to know that it would make you vomit.
Oh, yes. More gloom from Ben Johnson.
What a deal of cold business does a man misspend the better part of life in scattering compliments, tendering visits, gathering and venting news, following feasts and plays, and making a little winter love in a dark corner.
What a beautiful line that, isn't it? Making a little winter love in a dark corner. Somehow that sort of pessimism doesn't have much effect. A knowledge of the futility of life needn't necessarily stop you enjoying it. But some people have more cause for misery because of their circumstances. Here's an extract from the introduction to a catalogue of paintings.
Material misfortune seemed to dog him. He was half killed in an accident to the ambulance he served. His house was destroyed in the Blitz and all his unsold pictures with it. He was employed by the BBC.
Poor devil. I mean, given that kind of suffering, it's not surprising that some people get irretrievably pessimistic and want to end it all. When Benjamin Franklin was ill, a well-wisher came and said, "I hope you'll get better." Franklin replied,
"I hope not."
Unfortunately, many people have this attitude at times. Here's a report from the old Manchester Guardian.
It was alleged at Caerphilly yesterday that when a young collier who was lying across a railway track on Sunday night with the intention of committing suicide was told by a porter that there would be no train on that line until the next morning, 9 hours later, he replied, "I'll wait till then."
Probably, of course, the train was cancelled because of staff shortage. Death of a thousand cuts. A quicker method of dispatch and one favoured by cartoonists is jumping off a high ledge. The trouble with this is that people then come along and try to talk you out of it. Often it's a policeman, and they are trained to play the whole thing very coolly and casually.
Oh, hi! You thinking about jumping, are you? Your first time, is it? Me? No, I'm on my way to work, as a matter of fact. I usually walk around the ledges. I find it kind of helps me unwind. I don't know. You don't happen to be in advertising by any chance, do you? Yeah, I was more than a lucky guess. We got a lot of advertising people out here. which way did you come out, by the way? Did you come out through the window or did you come around the corner of the building? No, the reason I asked, there are two other advertising guys on the southeast corner. I thought maybe... You're drawing a hell of a crowd for a weekday. Yeah, really. The last couple of years, jumping has really fallen off. I didn't mean it that way. No, really, seriously. You take 1929, for example. You literally couldn't get out on this ledge in 1929. No, we had people lined up in the corridors just waiting to get out on the ledge. Finally, we finally went to that numbered card system they use in the butcher shops. You ever thought of that? Uh-oh, some fink turned you in. Yeah, you see the guys with the net down there? Yeah, they're firemen. Yeah. I'll give you a little tip there. You might kind of edge your way toward the corner of the building, you see. Then they'll start to follow you. Then you run back here and jump. Well, they get all confused and they start pulling different directions out, and they'll never make it back in time, believe me. Don't be silly. I'm glad to do it for you. Well, listen, gee, I really ought to be getting to work, you know. I'd love to stay around and catch it, but... No, don't be silly. Take your own sweet time about it. Yeah, that is a long way down, isn't it? You're kind of chickening out now, huh? That happens quite a bit. You have a certain responsibility to those people down there, though. I some of them been there a half an hour or so, you know. No, it's up to you. I mean, if you don't want to, you know, you don't have to. Well, all right, sure. Well, listen, I'll get in and then you follow me, all right? Okay. Oh, one... Now, where the hell did he go?
Bob Newhart. Suicide is, of course, one of the more extreme forms of pessimism. But the feeling's always around in lesser ways. Sometimes its presence is not deliberate, just an unwritten admission that the worst will probably happen. This is particularly true on public notices and advertisements. First from a cafe.
Customers who consider our waitresses uncivil should see the manager.
An advertisement from a Rhodesian paper.
We can safely say that there is no repair job necessary on the car that cannot be executed more efficiently than by us.
One from the Los Angeles Times.
Foot troubles relieved. Custom-made arches designed and made for your particular discomfort.
That sort of thing can be very discouraging for the potential customers. But there are other ways of bringing someone down. Here's a report from the Sunday Express.
Margate Corporation has a new slogan. There's life in the Margate air. It's being sent to all parts of the country on envelopes containing reminders that cemetery fees for the year are due.
That's just the sort of thing to depress someone, particularly if they're feeling low before. The trouble is, when you're down, no one seems very sympathetic.
I've been very poorly, but now I feel prime. I've been out today for the very first time. I felt like a lad as I walked down the road. Then I met old Jones and he said, "Well, I'm blown. My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. Oh dear, you look dreadful. You've had a near shave. You look like a man with one foot in the grave." I said, "Bosh, I'm better. It's true I've been ill." He said, "I'm delighted you're better, but still, I wish you'd 1,000 for me in your will. My word, you do look queer." That didn't improve me. It quite put me back. Still, I walked farther on, and I met Cousin Jack. He looked at me hard, and he murmured, "Gee whiz, it's like him. It can't be. It isn't. It is. By gosh, you'd have thought it. Well, I declare, I'd never have known you except for your hair. My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. Your cheeks are all sunk, and your colour's all gone. Your neck's very scraggy. Still, you're getting on. How old are you now?" "About 50, that's true." "Your father died that age. Your mother did too." "Well, the black clothes I wore then will come in for you." "My word, you do look queer." That really upset me. I felt quite cast down. But I tried to buck up, and then up came old Brown. He stared at me hard, then he solemnly said, "You shouldn't be out. You should be home in bed. I heard you were bad. Well, I heard you were gone. You look like a corpse with an overcoat on. My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. You'd best have a brandy before you drop dead." So pale as a sheet, I crawled in the King's Head. The barmaid sobbed, "Oh, you poor fellow." And then she said, "On the slate, you owe just £1.10. You'd better pay up. We shan't see you again. My word, you do look queer. My knees started knocking. I did feel so sad. Then Brown said, don't die in a pub. It looks bad. He said, come with me. I'll show you what to do. Now, I've got a friend who'll be useful to you. He led me to Black's undertaking depot, and Black, with some crepe round his hat, said, hello? My word, you do look queer. My word, you do look queer. Now, we'll fix you up for a trifling amount. Now, what do you say to a bit on account? I said, I'm not dying. He said, don't say that. My business of late has been terribly flat, but I'm telling my wife she can have that new hat. My word, you do look queer. I crawled in the street and I murmured, I'm done. Then up came old Jenkins and shouted, oh, son! My word, you do look well. My word, you do look well. You're looking fine and in the pink, I shouted. Am I? Come and have a drink. You put new life in me. I'm sounder than a bell. By gad, there's life in the old dog yet. My word, I do feel well.
Lovely old number from Stanley Holloway. There must be a balance between looking for the worst in the future and remaining sane, but some forethought isn't a bad idea. From the old News Chronicle.
Parishioners at Beeston Regis, Norfolk, are making plans for the year 2192. Calculating that the sea will menace their parish church about that time, they are asking the church council to open a fund which will enable it to be removed further inland.
Be prepared for any eventuality. It's the only way. News from the Daily Mirror.
Among the town's new proposed bylaws is one that imposes a fine of up to £2 on any trolley bus passenger who throws money to be scrambled for by any person on the road or footway. An official said, there's no particular reason for the bylaw, it's just a safety precaution.
Mind you, if you look even further ahead, it can land you in trouble. Here's a report from a wartime daily sketch.
Mr. H. Clark, prosecuting, said Bradshaw returned his enrollment notice with a message, I object to fire-watching, as it appears to me to be an attempt to prevent the fulfillment of the scripture which says that the world will be destroyed by fire.
One tends to meet the sort of person who expects disaster at the most inopportune moment. Just when you're doing something on your own initiative, some gloomy fellow turns up and casts a damper on the proceedings. I mean, say you were just gardening.
How do you do?
How do you do?
When you've done chucking nuts all over your shoulder, you've just buried your coat. You've got a right job on with that lot, haven't you?
Fun?
I say you've got something done with that garden. Oh, this is nothing. When we first came here, it was like a desert. Well, I should have left it as it was and bought a camel. That blackcurrant bush looks a bit shot at.
Oh, I've only just put that in.
Rip it out.
What?
What have you been growing by this fence?
Well, I planted rhubarb and it never came up.
I should look next door. You'll never do any good here till you've got some proper drainage. I should make a fresh start altogether. See what I mean? You want 2 or 3 tons of shingle, top it up with some of that spar, about 4 or 5 tons of clinker after that. Then you can come with your soil. See what I mean? 30 or 40 lorry loads will do it. Level it off with as much fertilizer as you can get hold of. Then you can start talking.
Well, what's the move after that?
Well, it depends on where you want to live. And while you're at it, I'd knock all this trellis down. Get rid of it. Get some rockery there. Fence it back. Some roses on it. Look lovely in the summer.
Yes, and I'll shift that old fireplace we took out of the bedroom.
Now, don't go mad. That's the only decent thing you've got. Then I'd go in for flowers. Hydrangeas, petunias, leopard stongs, sunset glories. I can see it now. A right blaze of colour.
Yes, it sounds marvellous.
Of course, you never grow them here. You get no sun on this side at all. See what I mean? What you could really do with is your house turning right round. If you build a glass house here, of course it means knocking that wall down. We could just get it in nicely. Mind you, it'd take 2 feet off your lounge.
But what's that if you're getting gooseberries all the year round?
I'll read. That sort of omniscient gloom can be very depressing. So, Alfred, cheer us up with a little poem.
Yes, indeed. This is The Pessimist by Ben King. Nothing to do but work, nothing to eat but food, nothing to wear but clothes to keep one from going nude, nothing to breathe but air, quick as a flash 'tis gone, nowhere to fall but off, nowhere to stand but on, nothing to comb but hair, nowhere to sleep but in bed, nothing to weep but tears, nothing to bury but dead, nothing to sing but songs. Ah, well, alas, alack, nowhere to go but out, nowhere to come but back.
Nothing to say but thank you, because that sort of worldview is a bit flattening, but life is full of snags. Some anonymous thoughts.
Whenever you're in the bath and the phone rings, it's invariably the wrong number.
And whenever you open a tin of sardines, the key gets stuck halfway across. And whenever you're just about to put on a new white shirt, you cut yourself shaving. Whenever you put the milk saucepan on, it boils over. Sometimes you wonder if it's all worthwhile. Ambrose Bierce.
Before undergoing a surgical operation, arrange your temporal affairs. You may live.
Then all you can do is grin and bear it. It could be argued that pessimism is just a realistic view of life, an ability to face the facts. Sometimes it's better to accept the worst, as in this report from the Evening Standard.
The vicar thinks it's impossible for his parishioners, most the boarding house keepers, to keep all the Ten Commandments, so he reduced them to 9 for his services.
Which one did he leave out? We never find out the interesting thing. Is it not coveting your neighbour's oxtail? Another example of realistic pessimism from the Reverend Sidney Smith.
I'm just going to pray for you at St. Paul's, but with no very lively hope of success.
Some people live all their lives in anticipation of disaster, while others need an actual disaster to make them aware of it. A letter addressed to the old Manchester Guardian.
The village of Stone in Buckinghamshire, which straddles the main Aylesbury-Oxford road, recently asked for a speed limit. The application was turned down on the grounds that there had not been enough accidents there yet.
Their time will come. We get the juggernauts down there. Strange how we laugh at the misfortunes of others, and yet the funniest comedians are the ones who seem most put upon. Like, for instance, Woody Allen.
My wife divorced me because she thought I was weird. She disapproved of my friends. I have weird friends, or I had weird friends. My friend Nathan raised sheep. Used to feed them silkworms. Try and get jackets with lining. The Japanese boy I used to hang out with, who flew for them during the war, you know? He'd flown 9 successful kamikaze missions for the Japs in World War II. And a boy from my group analysis group who was a southern bigot and bedwetter. He used to go to his Klan meetings in rubber sheets. This is my bohemian group of friends, you know. My wife did not approve of them at all. And it was my wife's birthday, and we used to exchange novelty gifts all the time. So I bought her in a Third Avenue antique shop an electric chair. Told her it was a hairdryer. I blew out all the lights in the house, you know. I gave her a great tan. And all the wires, the electric wires in our apartment, went amok. Everything got ruined, and I started to get police calls on my rotissimat. So I'm in the kitchen one night, I'm barbecuing a chicken. All of a sudden I hear car 22. So I thought the chicken was talking, you know. So I put my head in the rotissimat, I said, "What'd you say?" My wife entered at that point. Looked pretty ugly. She divorced me. Charged me with conversing with a revolving chicken.
Sure, the house, car, bank account, rotissimo. In the event that I remarry and have children, she gets them.
Woody Allen. And that's pretty well the end of our look at pessimism. Let's conclude with a thought from James Haggerty.
One day I sat thinking, almost in despair. A hand fell on my shoulder and a voice said reassuringly, "Cheer up. Things could be worse." So I cheered up, and sure enough, things got worse.
Bad bye.
Bad bye.
Frank Muir Goes Into Pessimism was produced by Simon Brett and John Lloyd.